This podcast is sponsored by Crayon, the market leader in competitive intelligence software. Crayon brings a complete real-time picture of what your competitors are up to, helping to arm key departments in your organization with valuable insights delivered in a range of formats that can be easily accessed and acted on, so you can quickly see and seize opportunities and build a sustainable business advantage. To see how we can help you achieve measurable growth, go to crayon.co. Crayon, compete like you mean it.
It's time to get off the sidelines and get into the fray. My name's Eric Manser. I'm VP of Product Marketing at Crayon, and I'm your host for the Product Marketing Alliance's podcast dedicated to all things competitive intelligence. Now, I don't know about you, but I can't seem to do anything without feedback. Now, that's not to say that I'm besieged by imposter syndrome or I'm racked with insecurity. I'm not. Or at least I don't think I am. The point that I'm getting at is that all good collaborative processes are built upon the values of transparency and cross-functionality, and a competitive intelligence program is no different. My guest today is Aaron Stillman. He's the VP of Product Marketing and Education at AB Tasty. Aaron cut his teeth in the competitive intelligence discipline back when he was the director of product marketing at HealthX, and now he's running the whole show at AB Tasty, which is a maker of software that optimizes the customer experience. A CI program cannot be created in a vacuum, and Aaron has 4+ years of experience in making sure that everyone's on board by letting their true feelings be known about the process that he's building. But every feedback loop begins with an inciting incident, which is often a discussion with a key stakeholder. But how does that discussion even start? Like, what is the first thing that Aaron says to his counterpart across the table? Just how does he bring up the notion of competitive intelligence?
I think one of the best approaches that I've taken is to be very humble. Mm-hmm. And when I start the conversation, I say, listen, everything is changing rapidly and regularly, and I'm not always going to have the most up-to-date accurate information. And the only way that I can succeed helping you succeed is if you look at what I'm doing and say, that's not true. That's wrong. I heard something different. That works. That doesn't work. And so, like, I take a very humble approach of saying, I'm not going to take offense. I want you to criticize. I want you to, you know, give feedback, basically, because you're on the front lines and I rely on you as a subject matter expert, as a salesperson, as a customer facing person. And I think that automatically, like, breaks down any sort of defense mechanisms and gives a clear signal that, you know, I'm not successful. If you're not successful, help me help you, kind of a thing.
Are you a conversationalist by nature? I mean, are you prone to striking up conversations with people about topics that they may not be well versed in? It seems like you are, because you approach these things with humility. That's almost like a tactic or a method by which you can get people talking. Like, it seems like you've already flexed that muscle quite a bit.
I love psychology. I love people and interactions and, like, the life game of chess, right? Like, if I do this, you're going to do that, and 3 steps ahead. We actually just had a VP seminar at AB Tasty where we all took an exam to figure out our brains. It was super interesting, right? Like, everyone got 3 letters. And so my 3 letters was vision, caring, and decisiveness. And then I went and I looked at my astrological sign, which is a Gemini. And all these things started marrying together in a really sort of scary, bizarre way. But, you know, to your point, yes, I am social by nature. I'm a conversationalist, and I thrive off of those types of interactions.
I'm assuming that was almost like a predictive index or a Myers-Briggs or something like that. Was there something about that survey or what have you? Did it make you think differently about yourself? Did it reveal something to you that you perhaps may not have known?
No, not really. But what it did 2 things. The one thing it did was it helped explain my behavior in a certain way. It was like, all of a sudden I was like, that makes sense. That's why, like, my immediate reaction to certain things is X versus Y, right? The other thing that it did for the group was, for example, like, JY, who's the chief product officer, he's more on execution, right? And so it was like opposites attract. We get along really well. And there was something about the executive team being to reflect on the balance of different sort of brain powers and personalities. And then we started joking around about that Edison quote, you know, vision without execution is hallucination, you know? I would say it explained more about why I behave and act the way I do than anything earth-shattering. Like, I think I knew all those things about me. And it also opened up a great sort of conversation within the executive team on how we marry up with each other.
Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote a book called A Team of Rivals about President Lincoln's cabinet, of how he had to basically pull, you know, Southerners, Reconstructionists, all these people together. And what sort of what you describe is that all these different personality types, because of the fact that they are different from one another, they actually complement one another in a lot of ways. I gotta believe that actually helps spur on that feedback loop you're trying to create, right? People are naturally prone to, you know, they gravitate towards people they want to talk to. And as a result of that exercise, you sort of unearthed a lot of new relationships, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%. One of the things I love about competitive intelligence is, and I, you know, so at AB Tasty, I made a really conscious effort when we dedicated someone on the team to this, that we called it market intelligence instead of competitive intelligence, because I wanted it to be understood that it was broader than just this competitor and this feature.
Yeah. You're not the battle cards team, and you didn't want to be pigeonholed into like, oh, all we do is focus on competitors. In your mind, let's think more broadly about this.
100%. And it gave an opportunity to say, well, how can we help our talent acquisition team within the HR department when we talk about maybe competitors who are hiring with certain perks or losing people or just industries and markets, or we're thinking about an acquisition? Does that make sense? So it opened doors to get into different departments with different types of people than just sales, which may be like the age-old traditional, you know, everything I do for you to help you win, which is a huge part of it, but it's just one piece of the pie.
That's really interesting that you brought up HR. So talent acquisition is a way for a company to win, hiring the best talent. Business development or mergers and acquisitions, how do we acquire or partner with other companies in order to be more successful? That to me seems like a broader approach that requires you getting in touch with the right people. How did you say, okay, HR could be a great audience for this, biz dev, any number of different locations, product management. How did you find the right people within the organization to say, hey, can I get a conversation with you about this? Like, did you go to your boss, like, or just to the org chart, just shooting emails around? How did you make those connections?
You know, I guess one was, you know, because of my personality by nature, I'm very much looking to engage and talk with folks, even if we're not working together on something. So I just get to know everybody. And then in parallel, I can hear, you know, either directly or indirectly, pain points, initiatives, things that groups are working on. And then, you know, I'll look at like the org chart, or I'll know, right? Like, who's in the position of power? And that's not always the manager or the VP or whatever. It's like, who's got the boots on the ground trying to execute? And then my next step is to deliver value. And so I won't ask any questions. I'll go and do something, and I'll show up with something, and I'll say, look, I don't know if this helps you or not, but I did this for you. What do you think? And let's talk about what I could do differently. And, you know, and I used Crayon as a tool for this very purpose with our talent acquisition team, because we built out a board with specific searches specific to talent, right? And then I came to her and I was like, look, here's a board. Here's a bunch of data we've collected for you. And that opened up the conversation. And we've been tweaking it, and all of a sudden it opened up that path.
I was going to ask, because some collaborators, they almost need proof or validation that their feedback's being heard, right? You know, they want to know that what it is they've told you is being taken into account. So it seems to me with that example, you've gone to an HR person with something already and said, hey, tell me what you would change about this. Yep. And then you've gone back, made the changes, and then gone back to them. And that's how you've sort of continued the conversation. They're not necessarily asking you for proof that you've addressed their concerns. You're proactively coming to them with that, almost like more of that conversational or the rhetorical give and take, right?
Yep. 100%. And part of that, I think, is muscle built up over time working with sales directly. It's like, what's in it for me? Why should I fill out Salesforce? Why should I do this? Like, what am I going to get, right? And over the years, it's just been like, okay, let me prove that you taking the time to do this will deliver results. And it sort of grew from there, I think.
Is that your preferred way to stay engaged, sort of like instant validation? Or are there some people that sort of bristle at that? Like, okay, cool. Thanks for showing me what, you know, I told you to do. Like, do you have to modulate that a little bit, that type of interactions, depending on the person that you're interacting with?
Yeah, 100%. And what I love about working for a global organization is the real cultural human element of like engaging someone in the US versus engaging someone in France or someone in Germany. And like,
oh, that's interesting. So there's literally European versus US cultural things. And even within Europe, there's different, you know, how, and again, we're not making generalizations, but there are certain European countries where it's like, it's process focused. Give me this thing right now. Whereas others, like, you know, they take a 2-hour lunch and they're off, you know, exactly. They're offline by 4 o'clock kind of a thing. Right.
and this 100%, you know, it does go to sort of history and culture. And like, I love political science. I love Greek mythology and Roman mythology and all of those kind of things. And you can literally look at countries like Germany and the UK and the US, and we're very law and order. We queue, we stand in a line. And then you look at Italy and France and, you know, they're a little more loosey-goosey and they don't queue. Like, my French mother-in-law laughed when she saw a line of people for the bus. Like, what are you guys doing? Kind of a thing. And that permeates.
We're going to get so many emails about this conversation. I can't even tell you. So many emails.
I mean,
But you're making a great point, is that there is a certain amount of, we've been through the blitz, we'll figure it out. We don't need to have such strict process. Like, mm-hmm. we will get to our eventual destination without lining up where the door is going to be when the bus arrives, right?
100%. And there's this element of like feeding versus teaching someone to fish, right? And I'm all about teaching to fish and letting the data speak for itself. It's like, if you don't want to engage and you don't want to absorb and that's your decision, all good, no worries. But I also try to make it as easy as possible to collaborate. You want to send an email, a Slack message, smoke signals, give me a call, field intel, like, I don't care. Every possible option is open for you. We will handle it on the back end. And I think that also, for people who don't want too much process and things like that, it's like, just forward an email and put this email address in it and you're done. You don't have to do anything else.
With that sort of the fog-based approach where people don't necessarily know what they want or know the best way to interact, they sort of keep it loosey-goosey, to use a word that you just used. Do they know what kind of outcomes they can achieve from competitive intelligence? Like, how much of those initial conversations come with a teaching moment where it's like, hey, this is what CI can do for you?
Yeah. Well, on the back end of that sort of approach, in order to pull people in to be collaborative, is the sort of results and the output. So, you know, we've established on a quarterly basis, we're going to do a win-loss analysis. Mm-hmm. Based on competitors, we're going to bring visibility into the utilization of the CI assets, mm-hmm. and how that's directly tied to win-loss. People can draw their own conclusions. Just so happens certain folks who leverage certain assets seem to do a little better than others. And so I think that's where, without having to point fingers or call any names out and just let the data speak for itself, people can start seeing and hearing, like, maybe I should check that out. Like, you know, maybe there is something for me to look at. And my company, we're big into Slack. There's actually way too many Slack channels than I'd like to admit. But there is an info competitor Slack channel that's always quite animated by either people delivering info, asking questions, but also us pushing lots of updates and information and trying to group it together. One of the pieces of feedback was, okay, we understand you're making a lot of updates, but we don't really know when those updates are happening. And so we don't know the trigger to then go and look, you know? Mm-hmm. And it could have been easy for me to say, you should look all the time, every opportunity, yeah. every deal, every, that could have been an easy bullish like way.
Yeah, but people don't have time for that. They just don't have time for,
and they don't want to hear that. And that's not, right. that's not going to get the objective, right? So what we did, you know, based on the feedback was like, okay, we're making all these updates in real time, as close to real time as we can, but we're going to aggregate them. And then we're going to make, you know, an announcement to say, look at all these different updates that happened. And we're doing this like on a cadence so that we can try. And then we're looking at the utilization and you know, letting the data try to drive our next steps and how we collaborate with different regions and all that good stuff.
You mentioned the notion of letting people come to the realization on their own, you know, giving them a data set and leading them in a particular direction in the hope that, oh, like the light bulb goes off in their heads automatically as a result of what you're showing them. Have you had to be more demonstrative by smashing somebody over the head with the outcome that you drove?
Yeah.
You're nodding and it seems to intimate that you've had some leaders who have said, well, what does this all mean? And you've basically said, well, let me draw a conclusion for you, right? What was the conclusion that you've drawn and said, look, like this is successful. Let me prove to you why, you know?
Yep. Yeah. So I would say there's sort of two things. One, if I'm engaging with somebody who's clearly not looked at the information and pretending as if they have, or or is like, this happens, right? Like, it, you know, I think everyone's experienced this kind of a thing. I'll be the first one to go and take screenshots or find the data and be able to be like, you know, come on, let's have a real conversation.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, yes, I've literally taken data and said, okay, look, we can accept a certain percentage, and I'm just using an example. We can accept a certain percentage of opportunities where there was no competitor. But this is ridiculous, right? Like, this isn't realistic. Something is going on here. And so there are times where, you know, being very direct and very blunt has been needed in order to get a point across and be able to move forward in a good, healthy way.
You know, I consider feedback to be two-way. And that is to say that you can come tell me that my, you know, my cooking sucks. Tell me how to improve it.
Yep.
In the same way, you're saying, in short, you will go to somebody with data and say, your baby is ugly. Let's work on fixing it, right? You know, you use an example of basically data hygiene, I presume within a CRM, although it could be data hygiene everywhere, and be like, I wouldn't have a job if we were losing deals to other. Like, there is a reason why we have a competitive intelligence program. It's not just anecdotal. Why isn't the data backing it up? And you're coming to them and saying, I think it's because the team is not selecting the right thing in the dropdown. And you're using that as a way to provide feedback in the other direction to say, hey, let's make a change here. Let's instill a sense of rigor in the process in order to make everyone's job better. Right? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to sum it up. It's like, you know, I'm the first one to raise my hand and say, made a mistake, failed, good feedback, we can do better. What I don't appreciate is somebody who thinks their, you know, shit doesn't stink. Like, nothing over here, everything over there, right? So
we're going to get the explicit label on this podcast now, but that's okay. We can censor
it.
We'll beep it out. We'll beep it out.
Exactly. But yeah, exactly. Like, you know, we don't have to be I'm friends with a lot of the people I work with. I've always said, though, like, we don't have to be friends. We got to respect each other. And we're on a mission to achieve something. And that requires evolution within everyone in every department. Everyone can always do better. We're all trying to be our best selves, our best department, our best. And that requires having good, open, challenging conversations with one another. I'm not insulting you. I'm not trying to attack
you. No, but Aaron, what you did call attention to the fact is that, you know, part of what makes a good feedback loop for your CI program is that it's connected to the broader vision that everybody's already bought into. It is not an appendage. It's not this thing over here. You just highlighted the fact that everybody's already on the same wavelength when it comes to a particular strategic conversation about where you want the company to go. And your program is built into that. And that is a foundational 100%. Element of building this and keeping this conversation going, right?
100%. And when I talk about our roadmap, like when I talk about, okay, what are we going to do next quarter? What are our plans? I think because of my product management background, like it's just in me to say, and this is how it ties to the strategic initiatives of the company. Like here's the dotted line, like this department to this, to this, you know, and mm-hmm. it has to be tied to all that naturally. It's just naturally, I think, is a thought process.
You said that you are friends generally with everybody you work with, or at the very least friendly. You spend time in the offices,
exactly.
You know, all over Europe. So you actually have that level of personal interaction. When you start these conversations about your competitive intelligence program, what is the best way for you to keep them going? Do you try to have regular meetings? Do you use, you said you got a Slacky company, or do you have like a Slack channel where you, you know, it's a group of people, or are you pinging people individually, perhaps having a quarterly meeting with every one of your department heads about this?
It's sort of all of the above. So as I had mentioned earlier, we have a Slack channel. It's called Info Competitors, you know, Information Competitors. And that's right. The place that everyone's been trained to go in order to push pull information. We have quarterly meetings where, you know, I'll present to a group within the leadership for global results. And then we break it down into the regional results. And we go to each region saying, here's how the US did against your tier one competitors. Here's how Doc did, you know. So we try to personalize it and make it really specific. And also with the product management team, you know, here's some market intelligence to help with the roadmap and the vision and the strategy, benchmarking for features that might get built. But then there's also the individual one-on-ones where, for example, right, working at AB Tasty, having experimentation as a real foundational part of our offering, I couldn't do my job if I wasn't sitting down and talking as well as reading what our data science team puts out. Mm-hmm. I will never say, like, I can sit here and talk to you about the Bayesian statistical model the way our head of data science can, right? So, but in order to have that knowledge, like, I've got to have those one-on-one conversations from time to time. Hey, you know, help me understand, like, what does this mean? Like, and how do I tie this to the business? And, you know, how do we compete on this p-value? You know, again, I think it's all of the above. So individual, Slack, quarterly meetings, global results, regional results, and all of it sort of comes together. We end up everywhere all the time.
But we said this word earlier, cultural, and we talked about it just a second ago, this notion of it adhering to the broader company goals. Your program also, and I think in order for it to be successful, also has to take on certain characteristics of the company. Your company likes to test, you just said. Testing, mm-hmm. testing is everywhere. So part of this feedback loop you've built is basically like, hey, we tested this, here's the results. Hey, we tried this, here's the results. Open, honest communication, you know, let's figure it out. Here's what happens next. Like, you've essentially created a model of AB Tasty, of your own company in the competitive intelligence program. It has various characteristics from every region, from every area, every department, but also the broader, like, this is who we are type of a feeling to it, right?
And, you know, that wasn't me. That was, you know, Remy and Alix, our two co-founders, who bring mm-hmm. this culture to, like, all the departments. And right. I loved it, so I embraced it. And the thing I love about it is I've never wanted to do something that somebody said no to. I could have any idea in the world, and it's like, I'm just going to test it out. We're an experimentation company. Like, and everyone's like, yeah, we only win or learn. We don't fail. You want to try something? Go try it. You know, so like, I really buy into that. And it's great when people come to me and is like, can we try this? Or I go to them and say, can we try this? It's just the culture.
So let me switch gears for a second. There are probably plenty of companies out there that do not have the same culture that Remy and Alix had created at AB Tasty, where, you know, it's the warm embrace of just a good feeling around, you know, openness and transparency and honesty and testing and, you know, working within the frameworks, but also being willing to break from the frameworks. There's probably a lot of companies that are far more rigid about this, and a product marketer is creating a competitive intelligence program and they're being forced to swim upstream. What's the first conversation they have, and with who do they have it with, in order to start saying, I got an idea, I want to build this thing, give me some feedback on it in order for me to make it better?
I would say it depends on, you know, what that individual knows in order to decide where to start. If this individual already knows the strategy and the vision of the company,
yep,
which sometimes is not always very transparent or clear.
That's true.
So if they already know that, then I would say you would start somewhere else. But if you don't, I would go to the very highest part of the organization you can with your manager's yep. support and say, mm-hmm. I'm here to make you successful, but I don't know what you want.
Right.
Not in that way, but say like, look, I'm looking to invest resources and budget and people and execute. And I want to make sure that whatever I do helps achieve the goal. Let's talk about what that goal is. And then I'll go away and then I'll come back. So if you don't know what that like vision is and that strategy, I'd start there. If you do, though, I would then figure out where's the low-hanging fruit where I can have mm-hmm. the biggest impact, and who is it that's running that? Maybe it's the VP of sales in a certain region or a director. Maybe it's an SDR. You know, it depends on what it marketing, you know, it depends. But I would go there and then engage on that low-hanging fruit, knowing that you can deliver and build some momentum and sort of get a crack in the ice that you can then shatter and embrace.
I think this is the moment that I just realized that a feedback loop is not, I'm going to build a CI program and then I'm going to ask for feedback. You're basically counseling that hypothetical product marketer to don't build anything yet. Go to the highest you can get within the organization, say, I have an idea. The whole thing is germinated from that notion of that initial feedback on the idea itself, not even the program. You know, before you, you know, type into a Google sheet about what your project plan is, you're basically just asking for feedback on the concept of competitive intelligence. And that in and of itself can be the inciting incident to send you in the right direction and drive that first low-hanging fruit outcome.
I think that's 100% right. And what I would argue is, even if you are a seasoned individual and you've done it multiple times at multiple companies, you should still take the same approach. It's maybe a little bit different where you can show up and say, this is what I've done in the past. What do you think? Will it work here? Would this help? And instead of showing up saying like, I've done it before, I know it works, this is what we're going to do. Again, it's back to the collaboration. How do you win hearts and minds and get people on board and into a culture? And it's not by showing up and saying, you know, here's the program I put together for you. It's building that program together.
I'm also thinking, and I could be wrong about this, but I feel like the whole notion of gathering feedback is designed to make a process better and easier and more streamlined. I guess not just with the initial inciting incident, but also, you know, what has been the most valuable feedback that you've received about your CI program? Like, what is the thing that basically inspired you to make a change? Like, for you personally, what was the thing, you know, light dawns and you were like, oh yeah, I was originally going to take a left, but now I'm going to take a right.
I think there was a specific moment in my career where I got pushed by a mentor deeper into a data-driven type approach. Where like, mm-hmm. I think based on, you know, conversations, talking to customers and prospects and sales reps and everybody, I felt like I had it and I knew what I was going to do. And I had data, right? I had like tons of data, but he really pushed me. And I had done some CRM reporting and, you know, I did some kind of surface level things, but I took a real deep dive at that point and it changed everything for me, because what I realized was at that moment, a couple of competitors I thought were tier one, it was kind of superficial and it wasn't real. It was like mm-hmm. looking at revenue versus looking at number of opportunities. And if you looked at number of opportunities, it was like, oh yeah, like we compete all the time against them. But when you looked at the revenue associated with those opportunities, it was like, why are we spending any time on them? And that was a moment where I pivoted. I was like, look, we're that's noise. We got to focus over here. And here are the reasons why.
Interesting. So that piece of feedback sent you in a, I would say, a totally different direction towards following the money as opposed to following the activity, right?
Yeah. Like
there was more, and that is ultimately united to or aligned with a goal. Like our goal is not necessarily to win every opportunity. It's to win the most valuable opportunities. And therefore I should look this way as opposed to the other way, right?
Yep. You know, this happened years ago, and I would say it didn't just impact me. It impacted me for the rest of my career in life and the way I thought and executed and did things. But in that moment, it was like an eye opener, and it was only because of sort of the collaboration and the push and the criticism, right? Constructive feedback. It all depends on, you know, how you look at it and how you take it.
So that is interesting. You bring up this notion of criticism, right? Like you come across as a very humble person. You know, tell me, you said right at the top, you said, tell me what I'm doing wrong and I'm going to fix it. I'm the same way. And the two of us are the most perfect husband. Full stop. You know, how do you separate signal from noise with regards to feedback? You're going to have outliers. You're going to have naysayers that nothing is ever going to satisfy them. This sucks, blah, 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 blah. Like, how do you make your feedback inclusive while still eliminating distractions? You know, basically taking criticism in a constructive way and involving it into your feedback process while taking criticism for criticism's sake, you know, without any nuance or rationale, and eliminating it and saying, you are a suppressive person and I will bear, it'll be a cursory glance at what you're saying, but it's not going to be as a great reflection on the outcome of what I'm trying to build.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy because, again, everyone, we're all just human. And so like when you're putting your everyday, your heart, your blood, sweat and tears into this thing, and then some criticism comes in, you have sort of natural reactions to that. So it takes a level of like experience and maturity and personality and whatever the other things you want to say. For me, you know, when I hear these things, I try on the front of my mind, on my conscious, to say, I can feel my heart starting to beat. I can feel myself starting to react a certain way. I'm going to put that to the side and I'm just going to repeat and think about what's being said to me. And does that have any relevance to the vision, the strategy, the objectives for the quarter, the goals? And if the answer is yes, then I'll dig a little bit more. And if the answer is no, it's noise and it goes away and I move on.
So in the moment you get hot. You're like, you're telling me something that almost seems aggressive or argumentative in nature that I know maybe you assume positive intent. Maybe you mean it this way. Maybe you don't mean it this way. But you're like, this goes completely against what I either would have expected to have heard or what I think is feedback reflective of my work. So you sort of compartmentalize it. You say, I can't react in the moment. I have to sort of like separate myself in this moment from what I'm hearing. And then you re-engage with it later on, you know, basically through fresh eyes, right?
I mean, yeah, I know myself and I continue to try to know myself. So I know for me, like I need to do that when I start getting triggered and I start feeling a certain way and I can recognize it, I can put it and then come back to it. You know, Slack, I've been talking about Slack, they have a great feature around reminding. Like, so a message comes through and you can remind yourself tomorrow, 30 minutes, an hour, next week. I do that all the time. Sometimes it's in these situations. I get a message. And when you're not talking to somebody, you lose the contact. You lose the something. So I'll read a sentence and be like, I'm just going to remind myself about this, you know, and then I come back.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So the you know, there's no tone in text by and large.
Exactly.
So when you see it, you may be in a particular brain space and you're like, that sucks. That person out. And you come back to it and you're like, oh, through the benefit of fresh eyes, this is actually some pretty decent feedback. I'm going to take this into account.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And again, it's just a sort of a know yourself, right? Like I come from a place where it was like, I always had to respond immediately. Respond to the email. I'm on top of it, right? And that was my nature. And I still fight those tendencies. But as I, you know, try to like be my best self or work with the team, it's like you don't have to respond immediately. Sometimes you've got to take some time, take some breaths, and then come back and look at it objectively. Because at the end of the day, honestly, I don't care if it was, I mean, I care if something was delivered rude, but what I care more about is if it's legitimate, you know, and if it's legitimate and it's real and it can help with that goal and objective and strategy, I'll give credence to it. I'll act on it. Maybe I'll have a conversation later. Like, look, man, the way you communicated felt a certain way. You know, let's work on that. But that's sort of to the side.
It's separating ego, but you use the term objectively. You're also trying to separate the subjectivity from the objectivity. Is this feedback based on feelings, or is this feedback based on a business approach? And one of those two things is far more concrete, and the other thing is backed so much more by emotion. Sometimes you need to read something and, like, you know, create that dividing line in your head and putting it on a particular scale, right?
I think anyone in a CI program can relate to, whether it's sales or anybody else showing up and saying, oh my God, I got this opportunity against this competitor and I need da 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 da, right? Being able to set expectations at the beginning of every quarter, being able to talk about your program and what's going to drive the investments and the resources, and repeating it every quarter makes it so much easier when this happens and you say, no, sorry, not right now. Or how could that possibly be true? Because when I go in the CRM, we don't compete against this. Either you're not entering the data, so help me help you, or you are entering the data and we're not actually competing. So, you know, it's one or the other, but sorry, here's something I can do. I always try to find something, and it's just a matter of how far and deep and how much work on the other side it is for that person. It's like, at a minimum, I'll go run a win-loss report so you can see all the opportunities, all the notes. And if you want to read it and crunch it in your head and that helps you, great. I'm not assigning someone for the next month to, like, review this data and put together a little, you know, X checkmark comparison.
Humility, honesty, leaving your feedback at the door. All of those are elements, hallmarks of a high-quality feedback loop for your competitive intelligence program. Aaron has been so forthright about his process, and he even shared a bit of the metaphysical aspects to learning and growing as a person and as a professional. So I found it was appropriate for me to ask him to put some numbers behind his feedback loop. You know, let's say that there are 10 people that he goes to for feedback. How many of them would say that they are totally connected to what his program is doing? What percentage would say that their feedback is being heard?
So connected to what we're doing, I would say, you know, we've got, if we're talking about 10 people, I would say 7-8 out of 10, like 80%, you know,
80%
feel connected. They're proactively reaching out. They're giving field intelligence. They're asking, you know, they're engaging. I can see the utilization of the assets. Now, getting everything, 0%. Nobody. Right. Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a salesperson say, I don't need anything else from you. I'm good. I got 100% of what I need. Yeah. So I don't ever feel like the job is done and everyone's got everything.
Connected, 80%, good benchmark, but just going in with the knowledge that not everybody will always have everything they need. There's no such thing as a perfect CI program. That is something that people should take away from this. You might be 0% every single piece of their feedback is being observed, but at the very least, they know what's going on and they feel like they're part of the process. 80% is the move, right? That's a great benchmark.
Yeah.
Are you now optimizing for the 20%, or are you just, like, comfortable with that 80 and saying, you know, others are either naysayers or outliers, or they'll come on board eventually?
We're optimizing. We're going for it, you know,
yeah.
We're finding innovative, creative ways of doing it. So for example, we use Gong. I love Gong as a tool within the CI program, within product marketing, product management, you know, it's not just for sales. And we will coach through Gong with our CI program. We will provide... We will provide links, we will send messages, we will take snippets from Gong and put it into the CI assets. Don't take my word for it. You don't think this objection handling is good? Listen to so-and-so, do it, you know, and go talk to him. Like, you don't want to talk to me? Go talk to him. Like, you know. So we're going for it, you know. I didn't make this up. I wish I could credit the person, but I can't even remember. I read something at some point from somebody who talked about the mantra for their department was to be remarkable. It wasn't be great, be awesome. It was remarkable because they wanted others to remark about the group. And it just resonated, and I've like picked that up, and that's what I want. I want us to do such good work and engage everyone and deliver so much value that people are buzzing like, oh, did you check out that battle card? Did you see what, you know, Margaret did, or, you know, those slides, or, you know, hey, we won the deal. Thanks, you know, sales, marketing, pre-sales, competitive intelligence, you know. I want those remarks out there and for people to be talking about us.
That's it. That's the ball game. Here's the buzzer. Our time together is up. Aaron is not just a smart dude. He himself is remarkable. And I was thrilled to be able to have the opportunity to spend time with him and get to the bottom of how he was able to create an inclusive, collaborative, competitive intelligence program at AB Tasty. But he's not the only VP of product marketing who could wax ecstatic about this stuff. Perhaps the next amazing guest on Into the Fray is you. In fact, if you got a killer topic about competitive intelligence that you'd like to chat about, send me an email at eric@crayon.co or find me on the Product Marketing Alliance's Slack team. You've just listened to the PMA's podcast, Into the Fray, presented by Crayon. Thank you, thank you, thank you to Aaron Stillman for being our guest on today's show. And if you like what you just heard, we'd love it if you could hit the subscribe button anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, or even Crayon's YouTube channel. And if you really liked my conversation with Aaron, leave a little 5-star review and bare your soul to us. Give us some feedback in the comments. That kind of social interaction really helps us out, and we would very much appreciate it. I'm Eric Manser, and until next time, whoever you are, whatever you're doing, make sure you get out there and compete like you mean it.